Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are after a wild and raucous few days of stock market activity. Finally, something to talk about.
That was crazy, wasn't it?
You said it was the most wild 2 days in your career.
Yeah, I mean, I remember the 2008 time, and it was, I don't know, it just seemed like more logical at that point. You know, there was definitely some, what happened on Monday this week. All right, so we saw a significant problem where the U.S. was downgraded. I got that. But then today, where the markets were moving up, just kind of recovering from very deep losses, and then a dramatic move down right after Bernanke gave his minutes and his outlook and left interest rates at zero, essentially. Went down, and then a 75-minute rocket ship from much lower than the close yesterday and 1,100 on the S&P, under 10,000 on the Dow, and then, whoo, moved up like a crazy man. It was unbelievable.
What do you make of it?
Well, and let me just add one other thing. Last night, the futures on the S&P, as the Asian markets were open, were down over 3%, and then miraculously, at, I don't know, like 2:30 in the morning, they just popped up, took back all their losses. You know, there's a lot of it's the same old, same old. It's the government's intervention that is causing a lot of movement in markets. And I think the reality that interest rates are going to stay low for a very long time. There's a lot of short covering that went on once you got kind of moving. You had a lot of shorts coming into it that were sitting on some nice gains. Then you had the market move down and the shorts were maybe pressing into it. And then as the market turned, probably the machines, I talked to a lot of people, you know, tonight about what happened, and everybody's talking about, you know, it was the algorithmic traders and high frequency traders that the machines just turned on at 1100 on the S&P and just bounced off and just went into a buy program. And just blew the crap out of all the shorts and just ran it up. And as it ran up, it hit a couple of key levels of resistance, blew right past them, and just kept on going. And we're talking about a 6.5% round trip on the S&P today from the low to the high in about 75 minutes. Do you see that link? I put a chart there.
Yeah, let's see. Which link was
it? Actually, it was 3.5%. Oh, just the dive that dive went down after Bernanke put out his minutes and really talked down the economy and how poorly things are and the housing situation. And
well, that's reason enough for it to take off later.
Crazy, right?
Yeah.
That chart that you're looking at is just a slice that I looked at when from 2 o'clock to about 2:45 when Bernanke, after the minutes came out and the decision, I should say, and then if you actually looked at the full day, you'd be up at 11:71 at the end. From 3 o'clock on, it just went straight up. So this is kind of what we saw also last night for a different reason. But Taiwan was down, I don't know, 5% or so, and all of a sudden just did a U-turn and started moving higher. And then South Korea was down about almost 10% last night and then did a U-turn and only finished down 3%. The reasons for those are both of them are a little bit different but the same. Again, government intervention. So what happened was that in Taiwan, the government says, you know, we're going to start buying the stocks of the companies in the exchange. In other words, they're going to open up and actually buy in the open market. Korea clamped down and said, you know what, no more short selling for another 3 months. And then on top of that said they're going to possibly buy in with some of the sovereign wealth funds directly into the market. I mean, this is no free market anymore.
No, that's bad. You can't do that.
Yeah, but it's what everybody does. Look what happened in Europe last week. They went against their principles and their agreements, and they bought Spanish bonds directly at the market. The ECB spent money on that. They explicitly agreed that they were not going to do that in that agreement for the sovereign, what they call it, the financial fund. They put together that $1 trillion. But they did it anyway.
Well, so what do you think's coming ahead? I mean, the Thursday action, obviously, were people that were tipped off. What do you think?
Tipped off about the Friday jobs number?
Yeah. No, not the jobs number, about the S&P, leaking the S&P being downgraded, don't you think?
Well, we definitely heard some whispers around. There was a few news services that we use, and there was talk on Friday morning about the potential for an after-hours downgrade by S&P. That was, too accurate not to ignore.
So what happened? So what did everybody do on Friday? You bailed?
They took the market down, then took it right back up at the end of the day. There was really nothing happened on Friday. The market was down most of the day, and then it just shot up to, I think the Dow was up, NASDAQ was down, and S&P was flat. But there is a lot of volatility here. I mean, the ranges of movement is extraordinary, and the movement of individual stocks is just breathless. Breathtaking, I should say, I guess.
Well,
makes you breathless. But the reason for this is there's a lot of indecision out there. There is mutual funds and players out there that are trying to support the markets. And then there are people just bailing. I mean, the action yesterday and the volume yesterday had all the makings of it just a bail sale where they just say, just take it at any price. The actual count of selling on the bid, in other words, not waiting for somebody to take your stock but forcing the sale, was something like 50 to 1, which is very unusual.
So what do you see as the rest of the week?
Well, right now everybody's happy because we had this big rally today, and there is some support due to the fact that the Fed is going to keep interest rates very, very low. But I think there's a reality check that needs to be done, in that the reason they're going to keep rates low and dangle the potential for other measures is because the economy, they say, and they're usually pretty much a cheerleader, they see a lot of problems in the economy. And they see a lot of slowdown happening. And they realize that the unemployment situation can't be controlled very well. So I think we're going to continue seeing a lot of problems, but at the same time, now we have a little bit of they're not more accommodative, they're just maintaining their accommodations. And I think there'll be a little bit of a safety net underneath that. Mm. But that being said, right now we have a reprieve in Europe, and we have a little bit of a reprieve here. I mean, who knows what's next? There's rioting going on in London. We could talk about that in a minute. And the European situation is not over. The ECB had to buy again Spanish bonds and I think Portuguese bonds today. Italy is far from over. The whole thing could rear its head in 3 days. People could be upset again. There's not a lot of really good positive drivers in the world right now. You saw the CPI of China at 6.5. They said they may hold off interest rate raises for a little while only because they want the world to heal a little bit. There was, I think it was Singapore, had a dramatic drop of exports. And bond sales and one of the worst bond sales ever in Japan tonight. That doesn't really matter to markets. They'll just kind of move on momentum. But when it does catch up is where the problems come in. So there's just a lot of bad news out there. It really is. The good news is oil prices are at about $80. Hopefully they can stay there for a while and help the consumer. And we don't have any more bickering with Congress in the show that they put on last week. Although the next show is going to be this whole issue of the special committee.
Yeah. Yeah, that's going to be fun. For a laugh.
Yeah, real fun. Real fun. Ha ha. So there's going to be a lot of volatility right now. And the question is, are we going to get back to the highs? I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of resistance as people are saying, you know what? I'm not going through this again. Bank of America was $6.40 yesterday.
Yeah, I know.
And they're being sued. Goldman Sachs are being sued by the feds tonight. You're seeing the banks just get pummeled.
They had the CEO of the Bank of America on one of the shows on CNBC today, and the guy, he's fumbling and stumbling, and Bartiromo asked him point blank, "Are you going to step aside?"
Yep. That was Moynihan, right?
Yeah, is that his name? Yeah.
Yeah.
Brian.
Yeah, Brian Moynihan. The bank is in big trouble. I mean, aside from the lawsuit with AIG right now and the fact that their portfolio is horrible and foreclosures are not lighting up and people are not paying. I mean, it's a real bad situation. And, you know, this is not – for some reason, aside from all the obvious, the yield curve steepness is not helping the banks. They're just not. And, you know, the good news is that with Bernanke's saying how low interest rates are going to stay for such a long period of time – it's not going to help the banks retain deposits or get deposits. And they're not going to loan any money either. So the banks are really stuck.
Yeah, well, so is everybody else.
Yeah, exactly. So what's going on in your neck of the woods? What's happening in California? I saw some interesting news about your budget.
What? What'd you see? They don't tell us anything.
No, they keep that from you. Let's see. It says that, California, you collected 10.5% less tax revenue in July than projected.
Yeah, well, that's because they drive the businesses out of the state as best they can.
Yep, and it's going to put the most populous state closer to drastic cuts to universities, libraries, and health programs. Sales taxes were 12.5% or $139 million below forecasts, while corporate receipts were down 19.5% or $69 million. Personal income taxes were 2.9% or $89 million higher than projected in May. So you're right. The businesses are not paying up, and obviously nobody's buying stuff that they're generating sales tax from. So it's once again
– it's an anti-business state, and so they wonder why this is going on. I mean
– we're going to go back to the IOUs?
Well, they do it all the time. I mean, it's not unusual. But I don't know what they're going to – I mean, they're essentially going to run out of credit, I think. It's
and
just
the problem
a poorly organized state.
The big problem you have now is that with the U.S. being downgraded, at least by this one ratings agency, and a negative outlook, it seems that the municipalities are next in line to receive downgrades, and they're already starting to get it by S&P. They're being very aggressive, S&P. Do you think that – we talked about this a little bit, but there's a lot of banter about this whole S&P thing. It was a revenge move. It was a politically motivated deal.
Yeah, I believe it was a revenge move against that bill, Dodd-Frank. If you read through Dodd-Frank, which is something like 2,500 pages, which is, you know, if you compare that to some like Glass-Steagall, which is like 30 pages, which they didn't want to redo Glass-Steagall, which seems to me to be the key to this whole mess. But if you read it, they essentially now are going to demand that ratings agencies do certain kinds of government testing for all their employees, and they have to meet certain requirements. And if you start really reading between the lines, it's almost as if they're going to turn over all the rating agencies over, not to the U.S. government, but to the Fed. You got to read this bill. It's a disaster.
So they're not going to have any they're not going to have private – ability to
say what they think,
right? Yeah.
And so the CEO in January of this year wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal bitching about this. He never named names or never said what the bill was, but he complained about the legislation that was about to be passed. And essentially, what he's trying to say now with the downgrade is, hey, the legislation requires the downgrade. It's your fault, not ours.
Interesting.
And he warned that they may go further. So if you want to start pushing them, you know, you're going to get another downgrade. See how you like it. See how much you like it.
Yeah, here's that and take that. You know, one of the things that is perplexing is that back in the 2006, 7, 8, 9 time period where the ratings agencies really missed the boat and clearly had a conflict of interest with the payment for their ratings and helping these package deals that were pieces of crap get packaged and then resold with mortgages and debt instruments inside of it. And then they eventually collapsed, obviously. And they, you know, were chastised. And then they come back and you could say that they're trying to get ahead of the curve. And then what happens? Governments just beat them to bits. In Europe, I think there was a raid a couple of days ago on the Moody's headquarters in Europe, in Italy, I think. And, you know, they're trying to disrupt the process there because they don't like the ratings they're getting because it's cost them a lot of money. So I guess if you're a private institution, you should be rated and you should be held accountable for the sloppiness of your books and the problems you have. But if you're a government, you don't.
Pretty much.
You know,
the ratings agency can now argue that if they had downgraded all these crappy packages back in the 2007 timeframe, the same thing would have happened to them. People would have gotten upset. I mean, you can't win.
Right.
I mean, essentially, the requirement is that you just give everybody a good rating, you know, wink, wink, and walk off and collect your money.
Right. So getting back to Glass-Steagall for a second, where you said this is one of the things that may have been part of the whole mess to begin with. One of the big things about Glass-Steagall was that it unseparated that wall that was there for years between banks and financial products and insurance companies and banks and this whole separation of them, of these various entities, was changed dramatically, right?
Yeah, it was essential to keep. What happened is that you run into all these conflicts of interest and monopoly issues when a commercial bank becomes an investment bank, becomes an insurance company, becomes, you know, all these different things that they don't have any core competency. Maybe they do, but maybe they don't. And in fact, when what's his name, Mahoney, Brian, the guy that runs Bank of America, was on in Bartiromo. Suggested that they sell off Merrill Lynch, and that wasn't going to happen.
Right?
He says that's the most important thing for our customers, that we can, you know, provide stocks, so you can, you know, put your money in the bank or you can buy stocks from us. We could package something for you. I mean, the whole thing was it's just.
But you have to believe that by connecting all of banking activities along with financial investment firm activities is where some of that overlap came in that really caused a lot of this mess, because now the investment guys, which have a whole different risk tolerance and a risk level than a bank, which is a conservative guaranteed place to put your money, they come together, and the appetite that they try to, you know, because in a way, you know, when you go to a bank and you use a bank, you're captive to what they have for you in terms of banking. Now they're outselling you and peddling you these products and creating these products and saying, well, you know, you're only getting 3% in the bank, you get 8% with this. And I mean, I think that was a big issue that really is just a gigantic mistake.
Oh, totally. And the other big mistake is the repeal of the law. And I don't think this was part of Glass-Steagall. I actually have to write up a timeline for this stuff because it's actually fascinating. The repeal of interstate banking. It used to be illegal. Bank of America used to be a locally owned bank in California. It didn't do business all over the place. It wasn't run out of North Carolina by some sleazeballs. And there was banks all over the place because they couldn't get out of the state. It was illegal to have interstate banking. There were some big banks that could do certain kinds of things between the states, but generally speaking, you couldn't do that. And so once you allowed interstate banking, they started gobbling each other up. They didn't care about the customer anymore because it was becoming like a Amway. You know, you're better off, you know, you just keep buying and selling banks until you get bigger and bigger. Your balance sheet doesn't look good. Buy two more banks. Oh, look, our revenue's doubled. And that has created these mega banks, too big to fail, which didn't help things at all. The whole thing is, and a lot of this happened during Clinton's, you know, people like to blame Bush for some of this, but Clinton is really the guy to look at. He was in bed with all these guys and, oh, yeah, let's just repeal that, repeal this, repeal that. And curiously, you know, these were all put in place in the 30s to prevent another, you know, Great Depression.
Right, exactly. That's the whole point. A lot of things that were put together in the 30s have been broken down.
Right, but they did prevent a Great Depression in the 70s. We had a really bad economic era from 1969 when the market kind of collapsed. It did collapse, actually. It went from like 990 to 400 or 500, 600, I don't know. But it was obviously a crash. It was a cascading crash, and it just carried through the 70s with all these, you know, price controls and high interest rates, and it was stagflation all of a sudden appeared. But there was never really a depression. It was just a kind of an exaggerated recession. But it never was as bad as this one looks to be. this crash because all those protections were still in play in the 70s. So we came out of the 70s. No one ever even mentioned the word depression during the entire 70s era. It gets mentioned all the time now.
Right. I hear you. By the way, the one of the other reasons that it's possible that there was a lot of buyers in the market at that those depressed levels today when it was down 2% under yesterday was that the yield on the Treasury after the statement came out or the rate decision came out, Treasury, the 10-year dropped to historic lows, the yield. They were just bidding those things up like crazy. And the 2-year as well. Well, the yield on the 10-year Treasury actually became equivalent to the yield on the S&P 500. If you were to buy the S&P 500 stocks, if you will, it's a 2.25% or 2.5% yield or so. Same thing as a Treasury. Huh. So, you know, why not get something where you have some price appreciation over the long term than buying a Treasury where you know is going to be problematic?
That's an interesting play. I like it.
I mean, and essentially what's happening is that Bernanke is doing everything he can to put investors into risk assets. The interesting thing that we're going to have to find out is how does with the downgrade recently, it's been a nonstop move higher for Treasuries.
Right.
Which is totally opposite of what quote unquote should happen. It should be saying, you know what, we don't want the bonds now. There's a lot of selling going on, but that hasn't occurred. It may occur, but it hasn't occurred yet. Second thing is that in a way, by pushing rates down through the quantitative easing process, which is done, and by lowering interest rates down to this low level, and because of the economic worries, all these people are buying treasuries, which are helping to bring down rates and then helping the government to fund these deals at much lower cost. So while there was this big brouhaha that a rate cut by S&P would cause a slight increase, at least on average, of the treasuries and cost about $100 billion a year, what actually happened probably saved $100 billion a year.
Interesting.
Kind of weird, right?
Yeah. No, the whole thing is weird.
Yeah. So there was three actual dissenters today in the statement, which is the most since 1992. Because Bernanke made a time commitment. He said that the 0 to 0.25% rate that's currently in effect, that will be in effect for an extended period of time. Remember that?
To 2013.
Now, all of a sudden, there's a year on it.
Yeah.
At least through 2013, which is kind of scary if you step back for a second and say, wait a minute, let me get this straight.
You know,
halfway through 2011, you got a whole year.
It's not legislative. You know, he can say anything he wants, but you can be sure that if all of a sudden we went into hyperinflation mode, they wouldn't keep that interest rate down. There's a lie.
Right, no, of course.
It's a promise. It's an empty promise. It doesn't mean if anything really bad happened, that lie would be reneged on. Well, I mean, it's a lie, but the comment would be reneged on.
How do you view the difference, though, between the words extended period to at least 2013 and extrapolate that that's something much better? Is it because it's an actual date and we know we have that much time? We have at least that much time?
Well, you know, you put a date on and then the Taliban's just going to lay in wait. They're just going to wait till we leave. Oh, wait a minute. This is a different situation. I don't know. I think it's just words.
Well, in China, I mentioned that the CPI,
maybe he just did that so they don't have as many. Now they don't have to have as many meetings.
Maybe.
Maybe he just doesn't like meetings.
Yeah, he doesn't have to do anything.
He doesn't have to do anything.
Just say ditto. Ditto. Nothing's changing.
Yeah.
It really is nothing to be said, actually, if you think about it, from now till then, if that's the case.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, with all these low rates, inflation is cropping up around the world and causing all sorts of problems for markets around the world. Actually, if you look at the markets around the world and you look at the year-to-date performance, forget about this week. It's absolutely abysmal. Anywhere from, 20% down to maybe 30 at Greece to, 10% down on most of the international markets. But the CPI, the inflation rate, was reported last night at 6.5%, a little bit higher than was expected. But food inflation on a year-over-year basis is tracking in at about 15%. I put another chart up there for you.
Yeah.
Look at the differential there.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people think there's speculation going on in the food supply.
Oh, that's ugly. I mean, it's one thing speculating on housing, but speculating on food supply, now we're dealing with people's ability to eat it.
Yeah, well, I'm sure some speculators are thinking, you know, this is perfect.
Yeah.
People have to have food so we can just corner the market on this and that or run it up and make a fortune. Yeah, I know it's bad.
Yeah. And then on top of that, the gold has been just on a tear.
Yeah.
Finished somewhere about 1735. I wonder where it is right now.
I see somebody, it was up higher even. I think somebody pointed out there was all these ads on all the right-wing talk radio shows and everywhere. Oh, buy gold, buy gold, buy gold. You'd have to. All the experts apparently are selling gold, by the way. If you're not buying it, you know, if some, we're experts in gold. Buy gold. We'll sell it to you. Don't you think that's kind of a...
That's kind of funny.
It's kind of a...
That's kind of funny. Yeah, yeah. You should have it. Take mine.
It's like this kind of the giveaway.
Right.
And so,
yeah, but it's amazing how many gold commercials there are and all these people. And now on the talk shows on the radio...
Yeah, this is the... You know, you can't really have a crash until the public is all in, because the public is the ones who always, you know, end up holding the bag, right? So as somebody pointed out on one of these, you know, financial shows, they said, you know, doesn't this smell like it's getting near the end here when the public, I mean, are really being hounded to get into this great investment? You know, they weren't being hounded when gold was $300, but they're being hounded now. And it just seems as if this thing is going to come to an end.
Well, there's been some central bank purchase of gold
every time I bring this up, you always throw that at me.
Well,
yeah, it's true. I know. It helps prop the stuff up. But, gee, I think some of these central banks would get a clue and say, you know, this gold is worthless. Let's dump it. Give it to the Indians or some dummies.
Well, what's happening is it's being used as a – I guess the best way to say it is an alternative currency right now. And it's – you know, people are saying, you know, wow, I need to get out of this market or out of the bonds. There's no yield up. Well, gold.
Hold on a second. You died.
What happened?
He just disappeared. You said gold something. And...
Yeah, 5 megabits, 2 megabits, 1 megabit, no megabit. Nope. Oh, yeah, it's definitely choppy, huh? Wow. 1.3, 1.4, 1.8. That's terrible. I'm supposed to have 10. Easy times at 1.5 download. Well, no, that I'm wrong. My download is 4.5. That's good.
Yeah. What's your upload speed?
1.5.
I can't hear what you're saying.
1.5.
1.5 what?
Megabits.
That's your upload speed?
Yeah. So like.
That's terrible.
That's all I can get.
You should be getting 10 or 20. I got 20.
Not even available.
Oh, what is it?
1.5 is the max.
Really? Well, actually, yeah. At 1.5, you should be getting decent fidelity.
Yeah, we should be getting the perfect 1.5. Yeah, I don't know what the problem is.
And then
I can see there's some dead zones in here, though, by the way. I can see it's like, you know, it stops every once in a while, so I don't know what's going on.
I would call my ISP and complain bitterly.
Yeah. And then they won't do anything, so it doesn't matter.
Of course they won't, but you can at least complain bitterly.
Yeah, then I can get it off my chest. Okay, I'll see you later.
Okay, bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.